Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Hey everyone, welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Sunday night, September 17th, officially 2 weeks left in the baseball season. It has incredibly flown by. I am Scott Jensen, joined tonight by Jeff Erickson. If you could please rate or review the podcast, get in there before the baseball season ends. We would greatly appreciate that. Those ratings and reviews do really help the podcast. We greatly appreciate it if you took a couple minutes to do that. If you want to follow us on Twitter, ask any questions. Jeff is at Jeff_Erickson. I am at Scott Jensen. Jenstad is J-E-N-S-T-A-D. Jeff, 2 weeks left in the season. How goes?
Oh, it's going. Couple of leagues that still fighting to the tooth and nail, but a few other that let's just finish this thing.
Yeah, mine are wild. I've never had this many leagues. Almost every league I'm in, like, I could win or I could finish fifth, and it's like stressful because that's a big money difference when you go between first and fifth, but all of them are super close and like they move every day and there's, you know, six or seven categories that are super close. It's tough when one steal or one strikeout may actually make a difference. It's a little gut wrenching right now for me, actually.
Oh yeah, totally. Totally. But that's why we play. It's for that thrill.
Absolutely.
For that edge. Yeah. It's not nearly as fun when you're just hopeless. You have no chance to win. Then you're like, okay, well, it's football season, and that's always toxic. You know, you want to be able to go down to the final wire. You want every Fab in September to matter.
I wouldn't mind one league where I have a little bit of a cushion for once, though.
Well, yeah, a cushion would be certainly would be nice.
So I wanted to start a little bit differently. We'll get into some free agents that might help you last couple weeks in a second, but I was going to ask you, you know, we got 2 weeks left. Is there anything that you're taking away from the season? Anything you've learned, whether it be from your expert leagues, your NFBC leagues, anything that you're really taking as a lesson kind of moving forward?
Well, my whole plan this offseason is to reevaluate how I address the hitters.
Okay.
Because Main Event and one of my online, you know, NFBC online, both of them, my hitting has been tragic. It's not just been bad. It's really bad.
Now, is that across the board or just certain categories?
It's across the board.
Okay.
I mean, it's really awful. And I need is it a draft strategy? Is it player evaluation? I mean, I kind of started that process last year, and then I thought I had kind of fixed it. And I did in some leagues. Towers, I have a better hitting offense now. But NFBC, maybe it's just hey, the takeaway is I got to play with worse players.
Yeah, that always is helpful. Is there any like certain group of players that kind of hurt you everywhere all year? Just kind of one of those things crossbar. Are you drafting too much pitching early? What do you have any idea what the hitting woes are coming from?
Well, that's the whole plan. I don't know yet. And that's what I need to really sit down and evaluate. I think I know for sure one of the things is I missed on a lot of my Fab targets early on. I was always second, third best on bids. I'm like, yeah, well, that's too much to pay for that guy. Well, maybe not. Maybe you just need to get your guy.
Yeah, this is funny. There's two things that I've kind of taken away, and that's one of them, is to be a little more aggressive early on with Fab bidding. I am notoriously pretty conservative. I don't like to try and overbid. I've had a couple big overbids this year, and they kind of made me even more wary. But I find myself losing a lot of guys like in April and May for, like, you know, I lose them 40 to 35 or 50 to 40, stuff like that, where I'm right around the right amount, but I'm just a little bit low. And maybe bumping up those a little bit for someone that I really like just makes a lot of sense. It's not worth 10 or 15 bucks at the end of the season. It's just not that big a deal.
Yeah, you're right. But when you miss out on Bellinger all over the place, even though you're super high on him, I draft him this score sheet mock we do over like Christmas break, basically. And, you know, I stuck my neck out on that one. I was right. But in the leagues that matter, no, I think I have one share of him out of 18 leagues, and that's just sad. Yeah. That sort of thing.
That's funny. That kind of segues into my other thing that I'm trying to do. And my problem is, and I do this a lot, maybe in the first 10 rounds of drafts, I'm going to try and stop drafting guys I don't really like. You know, there's so many times where I'm like, Oh, well, this guy's fallen. This guy's a value. But I do so much research. I study so much. I watch enough baseball that I'm going to get to the point where if I don't like a guy, I'm just not going to take him. I mean, obviously, there's an extreme. There's a point I'll take anybody. But I find myself sometimes, you know, getting stuck, you know, oh, well, this is top 18 and I'm in the 18th spot, whatever. That's what it was this year. But you know, there's always someone else I like that I can find that I like, and you know, I should not care, you know, what order guys go in. I'm going to try and not take guys I don't like. They really burned me this year. I've got to trust my own research just a little bit more, especially in those early rounds. I do in the middle late rounds. I really take guys that I like and I want, but I find myself in the early rounds maybe going to the norm a little bit, and it's really stung.
Who are some of those guys?
Miguel Cabrera was a huge one this year. I mean, we talked about him in March, and I was really doubtful of him, but I had the 18th pick, and there was kind of a clear set 18 guys, and he was the last guy on the list, and I took him where, you know, I looked at it, and I looked at my notes, and I liked Joey Votto more. I liked Freddie Freeman more. I think I got stuck in that group think, and when push came to shove, I made the call of Cabrera, and I don't know why I did it. It just was kind of there, but he was someone that I was really worried about in the preseason.
Yeah. Well, you and me both.
Yeah.
Have him. I actually liked him more, although – I attribute it to listening to other people too much, not enough to you, but for whatever that's worth. But yeah, I mean, I also passed on. I took Miggy over Votto and Freeman and Rizzo. You know, Rizzo is the guy I could have picked there,
right?
And that's the one I probably would have picked had I not listened to people. And I need to trust myself on that a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, and it works both ways. I don't mean to be saying that, you know, guys I don't like, you know, are all really bad. I mean, I love Matt Carpenter, and he's been really bad this year. He's been struggling almost all year, but I'm okay with that pick. You know, someone I liked, it was someone I researched. I liked him for a reason. I took him. It didn't work out. I can really live with that, whereas the Miguel Cabrera pick, I just can't live with because it wasn't someone that I really wanted, someone I liked. And in the early rounds, there's so many good players. It doesn't make sense to take someone you don't really like.
Yeah, and all you have to do is look at my main event. Look at the hitters I took, and you can see why I'm not competitive. Miggy, AJ Pollock, been pretty good, but he was hurt. Carpenter, Longo, really, you know, that was kind of an agnostic pick, and I was kind of like on it, and turns out he was just Odubel Herrera, Addison Russell, I was actually pretty excited about, but blech. Tomas in the 11th round at the expense of Thames, which, you know, now doesn't look as bad about the Thames part because he's sitting so much, but still missed out on 30 homers versus whatever Tomas gave me.
Right.
Cole Calhoun, just a kind of decent all around guy, but what does he really do? Russell Martin, I don't even like taking catchers, but took him. And CJ Crone, who got sent down for a while. Good now, but, you know, missed, you know, not on my watch.
You kind of got so shit on CJ Crone, I think. I get the feeling if he just slotted him in, I think it would have been a pretty nice season.
Perhaps so. But again, like, you know, I had dropped him by the time he got called back up and started playing again. So you know, because you can't hold a guy like that.
I'll admit that I don't have Evan Longoria anywhere. So, you know, I watch enough baseballs where I know he hasn't had a great year. But I wasn't quite aware that he only has 18 home runs.
Yeah. He's just not that special.
It's funny, you look at his line, he had 22, 21, and the big 36, and you thought maybe he was back, but back to 18, that's rough when there's so many guys. I mean, there's so you can list off the guys with 25 to 30 home runs this year. When you got 18 from a, you know, cornerstone guy like that, that's tough. I did not know he was quite that low.
Right, and it doesn't come with batting average or stolen bases to offset it or anything like that either. And especially because all the free loot was at corner this year, especially first base, you know, and it's even worse for Longo when you look at recent production, only one homer in his last 30 games.
Yeah. It's funny. You had Miggy, you had Longo. So you weren't really in the market for corners in April when everybody's picking up Justin Smoke and Logan Morrison, et cetera, et cetera. It's hard when you have guys who are underperforming, but are named guys. So you end up, it hurts you doubly because you don't take, you don't get the stats from your guys. You don't pick up the other guys. You don't really need them per se.
Right. Carpenter, you know, Addison Russell was supposed to kind of build on that power outbreak from last year, and No, sir. Did not do that. Although he had a beauty of a one the other day, but you know, again, too little, too late.
So what the heck do you do with Addison Russell next year? You know, it's he came off the 95 RBI season. I think we all thought that the next step up was coming, probably in the batting average. But this is 3 years in a row with the batting average around 240. It's kind of a pattern now.
Yeah, well, we don't even know if what the Cubs are going to do with him,
right?
Let alone what we should do with him.
He ain't the best shortstop on his team, that's for sure.
No, not anymore. And you know, one of the things that was touted about him was how good he was defensively, and he still might be, but we just see Javi Baez there doing his thing, and it's kind of tough. You know, he might be a last year's bum. You know, the acquisition cost is going to be a lot lower. You're going to get him in the 20th round next year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think he'll be a point where he's probably worth taking a stab on. I mean, it's only a year away from 21 home runs, 95 RBIs. He's still only 23 years old. So he's an interesting one. You got to think he's going to fall way far, but I need to see what the Cubs are doing with him first.
Right. And we'll see their offseason. I mean, Zobrist kind of fell off this year too. So, I mean, there's probably going to be an opening. They got to figure out their outfield. They got to figure out, Ian Happ, is he going to play second? Is he going to play outfield? What are they going to do with Zobrist? What are they going to do with Hayward? You know, they've got a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, that that Hayward contract does not look especially strong at the moment.
No. And at no point has it looked especially strong.
And his you look at like his WAR numbers, and his studly mid-teens WAR defense has gone away. He's down to a 3 WAR defense, and the offense is not there either. So suddenly he's not this stud you stick on in the field to make plays. And I don't know, he's got 10 home runs in 115 games.
Yeah.
So looking at this week, you know, obviously we got 2 weeks left. It's you want to find guys that maybe can help you out a little bit. The first guy I wanted to ask you about is Luis Gohara from the Braves. He has 2 starts this week, one against the Nationals and one against the Phillies. Obviously, the National one, a little sketchy, but the second start home against the Phillies is definitely one you want to get. He's a big strikeout guy, 10.3 Ks per nine in AA, 12.23 in AAA. Struck out 6 Nationals in 6 innings. He only gave 1 run his last start. His first start was really rough. Got any thoughts on Gohara at all, or did you bid on him anywhere?
I did not, but perhaps should have. I mean, because you mentioned he did do well against the Nats. I remember the Nats writers on Twitter saying, hey, at least Gohara's out of the game. And remember, that was a head-to-head against Scherzer, if I'm not mistaken, where he was actually the better pitcher that day. Gohara's interesting because he was kind of – I wouldn't say he's found loot. He was always a prospect, but he's a big dude.
He is a big dude.
Yeah, he's tall. He looked like he put on some weight, but he's a guy that really blossomed this year after the trade to the Braves organization. Kind of powered through 3 levels to get to the majors. Started the year in high A, and remember he came from the Mariners, who just churned over their roster, and this is one that kind of slipped through their fingers, I think.
Yeah, it really seems like you get that big K. I mean, the walks are a little bit high, but the strikeouts are super nice. I picked him up in a couple places. I'm hoping that he can get through that first start. The Nationals seeing him again in 6 days kind of worries me a little bit. But the second start against the Phillies, I do like. But if you need K's, you need maybe some wins. He looks like a pretty good guy. You're hoping to get some double digit strikeouts from him this week.
Yeah. Yeah, you could do that. And, hey, any port in a storm right now, I mean, you're just looking to find places to try to find guys. And I'll say this. The Phillies start isn't – they got all these young guys.
They
do. Starting with Hoskins, of course. They're going to strike out a ton still. There'll be their days when they're really awful. And we saw that. Like, one day they went crazy. One day they get shut out, and struck out a ton. They're kind of tricky to – kind of pinned down right now. They're not a total mail it in team like some of these other teams. The teams you really want to target are the teams that thought that they were going to be contenders and reality set in, like the Tigers.
The Tigers and the Mets are the two that come to my mind.
Yeah. I think those are the ones you want to target more than the ones that were all along realizing they're trying to, groom their youth, and now they call up all their prospects, whereas the Tigers, they don't have prospects to call up. Once in a while Matt Boyd does something like he did today, but for the most part, they've been terrible.
I was going to say, speaking of the Tigers, I think Matt Boyd was the last person, last pitcher in all of baseball I would have predicted to go 8 2/3 of a no-hitter.
Certainly the last person to be do that on your active roster.
Yeah, he's been excommunicated from my active roster forever.
Yeah, so this doesn't change it at all? It's just chalk it up as September variance against a really bad team?
Yeah, there's too many days where I've seen the DFS stack against him work so well that I'm still staying away. I'll take a look a fresh look at him at the offseason, but I'm not jumping aboard for the last couple of weeks.
Fair.
My other guy I wanted to ask you about is Jaimer Candelario. Speaking of the Tigers, he's starting third base for the Tigers. They actually moved Nick Castellanos off third to let Candelario start every day. He's a switch hitter. He was 3 for 3 today, had a home run, 4 RBIs. He's mashing so far with Detroit. Struggled when he got called up by the Cubs, but playing time was kind of sparse in and out when he was get called up there. Not a ton of power in the minors. Hasn't had a lot of double-digit home run season, but did have 15 this year in 118 games. What do you know about Candelario?
Well, I mean, it was one of their better remaining prospects. I thought this was the one to, you know, it's weird. I think it was at softball on Thursday, and we were talking about the Tigers a little bit and what they have and have not done. And they waited too long to kind of punt. They got very little, I thought, for JD Martinez, especially given what Martinez has done. But they nailed this trade. Avila's been a good ad for the Cubs, and Justin Wilson is what he is. But Wilson's exactly the guy you flip.
Absolutely.
You know, guy having a career year that's kind of a middling track record. You absolutely do. And they got two prospects out of it. Candelario is good. The shortstop they got out of the deal is pretty good, too. So you got to take that. Paredes. So that's the, you know, I thought they did really well at this trade. Not a whole lot out of the Justin Upton trade. Not a whole lot out of the JD Martinez trade. I guess defense-limited outfielders, power hitters, aren't worth as much as they used to be.
Especially ones with Justin Upton's contract, I suppose.
Yeah, or Martinez becoming a free agent. I get that.
Yeah.
And neither of them are good defensively either. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I mean, Candelario, you know, we only have 2 weeks left. He's playing every day. He's hitting fifth. You know, someone that I think at this point, you know, at-bats are really valuable. You've got so many guys with tweaks or veterans that are sitting or teams that are in contention that have clinched and going to, you know, sit guys. So I think the guys playing every day has a lot more value than he would in, say, in, you know, June or something like that.
Yeah. I think, by the way, shifting Castellanos to the outfield, too, is probably the right move. I mean, I think he's kind of a poor man's Ryan Braun in that respect without the stolen bases. But good hitter, move him off a defensive position to maybe a less important defensive position, and he might do well.
Yeah, his defensive numbers at third base were pretty ugly all year long.
Yep.
So looking at injuries for the last couple weeks, there are some guys that, you know, I'm only going to hit injuries that are probably going to impact the next couple weeks. There's a lot of guys that are sitting here and there or resting. But the first guy is Bryce Harper. He took some BP today, but he said today he's hoping to return for the NLDS. So he's obviously a drop in any fantasy league. I know it's weird to hit the drop button on Bryce Harper, but he's not going to help for regular season. Playoffs obviously don't count. Sounds like he's back for the playoffs, but where do you fall on Harper for next year? I don't know if you looked at my column at all this week. I kind of went through the first round and did my top 15 and some honorable mentions. Where do you think Harper slots in ADP-wise the first round next year?
So hard because of the injury stuff. I mean,
it is.
It's really hard. And a lot of people held on to him hoping that, you know, he'd come back a lot, at least for the last couple of weeks. So good when everything's on fire, but you know, do you really? I mean, he's coming off of a knee injury. Do you think he's going to run next year? I don't.
I think the stolen bases are gone.
Yeah, so he's really got to be a 40 homer, 300, you know, 300 with 40 homers to justify anything close to his draft cost. Back of the first round, I mean, he'll be 25 next year, and he's playing for a contract.
Yep.
So I don't want to put that as a deciding factor, but it's there. I would say that, you know, he'll be the guy that has draft helium once he shows he's healthy again, just like he was this year. And you probably won't, you know, I'd say probably anywhere from 11 to 15 is where I'd want to take him, but that might not get him.
Yeah, I put him at 9, and I was it was tough for me to slot him. I mean, you look at his years in 3 or 4 years now. He's not earned the draft price that he was drafted at. I mean, obviously, 2015 was massive, and that was the one year that he was a mid to late second rounder coming off the injury marred 2014. But
right.
Last year he hit 243. This year, I guess he probably earned it, but he was a, you know, like an 8th, 7th, or 8th pick. Did hit 325, 29 home runs, you know, 92 runs, 87 RBIs, but you know, only 2 stolen bases, and the injury is kind of what killed him this year. But he was on pace to really be really good, maybe an MVP candidate, but that's 3 out of 4 years where you didn't really get an elite season.
Yeah. Seems like one of those, he's like a sports car. Everything has to be perfectly functioning for him to do his thing. But when he does, it's an amazing ride.
Yeah. I mean, the upside is as big as anyone, you know, maybe save Trout in the first round. But I think that he's probably the riskiest guy that's going to go in the first round. And, you know, with 3 or 4 years, I think it's fair to say that he's a little bit of a risky pick. It's not a one-off here or there, but he seems to get hurt. And last year's weird. Last year sticks in my head a little bit because he hit 243 and he played the whole year. I know he had a shoulder injury that, you know, was rumored in the kind of back and forth, but he's very tough to slot for me. I'd like to get him kind of where you mentioned, but I don't think he'll get there either.
I was just going to say, I was going to have you answer your own question. Where would you put him?
I put him at 9. I think that's about the spot that I would think about taking him. I like about 20 or 21 guys. It goes pretty deep. So I think if you're picking 9, you're going to get 2 of those guys. And so if I'm going to get a second stud, I'm okay taking a little bit of risk with the first one. But I don't know. I don't do it super supremely confidently, I suppose.
Yeah. How many pitchers are in your top 15?
I had 4 pitchers in the first round, and I prefaced it with this is an NFBC type or light type league with no trading. I don't think I'd have that many pitchers in the first round if I could trade for them later and kind of work it a little bit that way. But I had Kershaw, Kluber, Scherzer, and Sale. I had Sale at number 15, so I had 4 pitchers in the top first round.
Right, we had 4 this year too. With Mad Bowman, well, and mostly Mad Bowman, Thor being in that 13 to 15 range usually.
Yeah, someone asked me the other day, if you're in a keeper league, Severino or Syndergaard, who would you keep if you only keep one going to next year?
Wow. The fact that that's even a question speaks volumes about how the season has gone, right?
Oh, yeah. It was a good one.
I go Thor.
I took Severino.
Oh, there you go.
I just I'm not sure Thor being Thor is ever going to work kind of science biology right wise in terms of his arm. He throws so hard and he's so effective, but that slider is so hard. It's so hard in his arm. I don't know if he's ever going to pitch a whole year. And I Severino's been awesome. I mean, ERA under 3 in the AL East. He's been incredible all year long. He's going to throw 200 innings. I think Thor has more upside, but I think he has so much downside that I would keep Severino in that spot. But I could kind of see it both ways, and it wasn't one I could answer real easily.
Okay. I get it. It's a tough call.
It is a tough call. I thought it was a good question, though. Moving on with injuries for the last couple weeks, Miguel Cabrera, we mentioned him a couple times already. He sat out with some back tightness on Sunday. There was some talk of shutting him down. Some of the Detroit beat writers seemed to think that it was the smart idea was just to kind of end his season. Brad Ausmus shot that down pretty good, saying, you know, what's an extra 2 weeks going to do for him? So it sounds like if Miggy's feeling okay, he's going to play, but I'm not sure we see him more than, you know, maybe half the games the rest of the way.
Yeah, you'd be well advised to find a replacement.
Yeah, I agree there. Michael Brantley, no clarity if he will return this season at all. Kind of a weird spot for the Indians because they're obviously going to the playoffs. I don't know if he's going to help them at all. It's kind of a up in the air moment right now whether he's going to be ready for the playoffs or not.
Right.
And apparently they win a few games anyway. They may not even need him.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean,
that's an incredible streak, by the way.
Oh, it is. It's remarkable. And the fact is they did it without Kipnis. You know, they lost Zimmer halfway through. They really did it without Danny Salazar. You know, it's not like it's been a perfect season for them.
No, and it was crazy how much they dominated. Like, they had that one game when they came back in the 9th inning, and almost every other game, they're like, by the 3rd inning, the game was in hand. It was an especially dominant run. You know, someone that watched the A's win 20 in a row, you know, they had a bunch of walk-offs. They were, you know, come some close games. This Indian stretch was – I've never seen a team that dominant for that long. It was crazy.
Yeah, I think they trailed at the end of an inning, like, 2 or 3 innings in that whole streak.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I forget the exact stat. I might be exaggerating.
No, I don't think you are. I think it was three or four innings they were trailing at the end of the inning. I think you're right about right.
It's crazy.
And they had like seven shutouts in that streak too. I mean, there's teams that have seven shutouts all year.
Yeah.
Staying in the AL Central, Sal Perez sat all weekend after aggravating his intercostal. He says expecting a return on Tuesday. The Royals are kind of falling out of it right now at the moment. I don't know how wise it is for him to be playing. He's one of those guys that wants to be in there if he's remotely possible to be in there. I would definitely have a third catcher if I owned Sal Perez in a two-catcher league going into this week, though.
Oh, for sure. Hopefully you get a format like the NFBC where you can swap guys for half weeks, because I think that's what you need with him.
By the way, I really think that's a great rule.
Yeah, I like it too. You don't have to be on it every day, because let's be honest, that's hard.
Yes.
But at the same time, you don't get completely screwed by a hitter injury. Now, I wish we had the ability to do that with pitchers too, and I still don't know. I kind of understand the logic, because they don't want you to, I don't really understand the logic, because, obviously you're going to start some guys because of Coors Field that you wouldn't otherwise. Why can't you bench guys for Coors Field just that you wouldn't for otherwise?
I think it's just it would be too much of a streaming contest, and everybody would have five pitchers on their bench and be just playing schedules and matchups and that kind of stuff. Has always been the theory, is they didn't want people to just be shuffling starters in and out. Was always the rationale.
What do you want to bet? It wouldn't do them any good.
You're probably right. You know, you'd have to be really deep in a 15 teamer to be able to shuffle guys in and out like that. But I think you just have it would. You know, the strikeouts would be tough to catch up when people doing that. But I can see it both ways. I kind of like how it is now, but I could see it either way.
Yeah. I don't know. Did you see this is kind of a sidebar, but there was an article about how Warren Buffett issued a challenge to all the hedge fund managers out there that, hey, for 10 years, we'll take you five hedge funds, and I'll take this index fund, which is passive investing and as opposed to the highly aggressive hands of
right.
hedge funds. And we'll see who do better. And the index funds just wiped out the hedge fund. Like, it wasn't close. And I think sometimes that applies a little bit when we're trying to choose, we're going to maximize this lineup a little bit more. I mean, I think some people are very good at it, but I think some people try to time the market and they really probably aren't doing nearly as well as they think they are.
Yeah, I think that I think you would see ratios go up rather than down for sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Speaking of pitchers, Lance McCullers, there was some thought he was going to pitch on Tuesday. He will not. He's pitching another bullpen session. Sounds like he might pitch out of the bullpen once he comes back. No clear timetable. He's just not ready yet, was the quote from them. He's a drop in every league, I imagine, at the moment.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Jake Arrieta threw a 42-pitch bullpen session on Saturday. It sounds like he might be able to pitch next weekend. They play the Brewers, which could be a very important series over the weekend. Sounds like he might pitch on Saturday. That's a tough call if you got to make your decision on Monday. Or I guess it's Tuesday on Arrieta. They are off on Monday. But you throwing him this week?
Like you said, that's a really tough call. I'm inclined to say no, because I fear the short outing.
Yeah, without the minor league rehab outings, because all the minor leagues are done. Without that rehab outing, you saw with Felix Hernandez and James Paxton this week, you're getting guys throwing 45, 50 pitches, and when they have so many guys with the 40-man roster, you can kind of just piggyback on that and throw him four innings without a problem. I think I lean with you on that one, too.
Yeah, I mean, and then, let's face it, four games is a lot at this point. So, I mean, Cubs caught fire right at the right time. Had a very nice week. Put some distance on Milwaukee. Even though Milwaukee had their great home series against the Marlins in Miller Park, 2 8-run inning games out of three, they're still chasing pretty bad now. It's four games. It's six over the Cardinals. You know, sweeping the Cardinals was huge for the Cubs.
It was, and that Cubs Brewers series is a four game series, but. You got to think Milwaukee's probably got to sweep that 3 out of 4 at the absolute worst to have a chance.
Right. And that's just the thing. I think you'll look at the Cubs will approach Arrieta a little bit like, okay, we haven't lost any ground. Say if they split the first two. Well, okay. Then then I think they can totally afford to be a little bit more passive with him. Yeah, just get him his work, get him out of there.
It's easy for them. They just throw Mike Montgomery in there too. They have a serviceable option they can throw in any time, so that that helps. That's helpful too.
Yeah, for sure. It's shaped looks to me like the only remaining NL race is the Brewers versus the Rockies for the last wild card spot, and that's 2.5. That in 2 weeks, 2.5 games is actually pretty hard to overcome.
Yeah, that's tough. Although, you know, one 3 or 4 game losing streak can get there, but 2.5 is definitely more than it sounds when you only have 13 games left.
Yeah, I can be like every other commentator and say, but it's only 2 in the loss column.
But yeah, there you go. Yeah, the AL East is interesting though. 3 games is still a lot, like we said this point, but Yankees are kind of hanging in and they're making the Red Sox still push it to the end.
Yeah, 3 games. Yeah, and they're comfortable in the wild card too. Very comfortable in the wild card.
Yeah, which is nice. Minnesota's still leading by 2, though. I'm hoping they make it over the Angels. I think they're more interesting than the Angels are right now.
Yeah, 100 loss team going to the wild card. Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, and their offense is kind of fun. They seem like they score a lot of runs. They got a lot of guys in the middle of that lineup that are kind of mashing. Even without Miguel Sano, they've been hitting. Even Joe Mauer had 5 RBIs today.
Yeah, I wonder what the Angels' approach is going to be in the offseason, because they really made a push to go for it. You know, they traded for Upton, although they gave away Maben, which I still don't understand. They've had all sorts of key injuries on their pitching staff. You could make you could say that, hey, Socha's done a great job.
I would never say such a thing.
I know you wouldn't, but I think management could say that. I think outside observers might say that because of the way I'll say this. I like how he's managed the bullpen this year. I think he's done a very good job with that.
He definitely has, and he's gotten good work out of it too. It's worked for him.
Yeah, their run prevention is actually pretty good, especially for the American League. The Indians are standard deviation or two better than the pack at 353 runs per game allowed. Red Sox are at 408. The Yankees at 415, and then you got to go to the Angels at 435. That's pretty good, considering they have no ace to speak of. Yeah, they have this amoeba starting pitching staff.
Yeah, and Garrett Richards, who was kind of going to be their ace, missed pretty much the entire season. He's definitely worked well around what he's had to deal with, and especially when Trout for out for 6 weeks too. I mean, you throw that in there, the fact they're even being mentioned in the race is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. But I think what that's going to lead to is them not doing an overhaul anytime soon. Especially because they've got Trout.
Sometimes that is dangerous.
Yep.
Last injury note, Jose Ramirez obviously has had a monster season. He missed the weekend kind of resting his hammy. Sounds pretty precautionary. The Indians obviously have a 15-game lead. Once the winning streak ended, they sat him for a couple games. Sounds like he'll be back on Tuesday, but I would check that lineup. Before I get to a few players to talk about, a quick note from our sponsor, SeatGeek. Buying seats can be complicated, confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. Whether you're planning a day out with friends, searching for a last-minute deal, or buying seats for a loved one, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. Nothing beats being there in person for the biggest plays of the year. SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere with just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. I actually am planning on using SeatGeek to maybe go to a Niners game at either Thanksgiving or Christmas. I'm guessing the tickets will not be expensive, Jeff.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, again, I think we said this off air. We'll say it on air now. You've got a reason for hope. You went out. You got a good coach, head coach, I think, in Shanahan. You got the coaching hire that everybody wanted to have. You have Carlos Hyde looked great. Defense has actually played pretty well, but you're building from ground zero. And and you weren't expected to come close to the Seattle, and you made them sweat.
That is true. Finishing up, SeatGeek does save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. And it doesn't end with sports either. SeatGeek has plenty of concerts, comedy, and other theater tickets available too. The best of all, new users get $20 off their first purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code ROTOMLB today. That's ROTOMLB. That's promo code ROTOMLB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. See it live with SeatGeek. Right seat, right now, right from your phone. So since we're talking about the Niners, I'm going to jump to the A's. How about my boy Matt Olson? 3 home runs in the last 3 games. He has now 21 home runs in 53 games, 44 home runs this year across the minors and the majors.
And some monster shots, too.
Goodness, yes.
I mean, that one the other day, was it 480 or something like that?
Yeah, I think it was 483 or something like that in Philly. And he hit it, and he kind of put his head down. I was like, I think he got that, and he hit it so far that he just put his head down. It was wild.
Yeah, legit. And he, you know, for all the talk about Hoskins, not many people are talking about Olson. And granted, I get it. It's West Coast on a team that's not getting a whole lot of, you know, attention, even less than the Phillies, because who are at least got the all these prospects up at once. Where the A's, they've actually consciously gone to this youth movement, but people don't realize it as much. So it's kind of a little bit more under the radar. It's kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, it's funny. They kind of have a youth movement on the offensive side. It's so different from what they've done for the last, like, 20 years. They always had all these, like, young pitchers they'd always bring up. I think the pitching side's kind of bare right now, but the offense, there's a lot of young guys who are really intriguing right now. And Matt Olson looks great. Matt Chapman looks pretty good. Ryan Healy's got some power. Franklin Barreto has not done much, but kind of on the way. So the offense is kind of appealing, but the pitching staff, not so much.
Yeah, well, yeah. World needs ditch diggers, too. Yeah. Well, then let's face it. I mean, Cotton's been a big disappointment this year.
Oh, yeah.
Really. And I expected big things out of him this year, and so did a lot of people. I think Minaya is good moments and bad moments both. But yeah, it's tough. And then they traded it. You know, they traded away Sonny Gray, you know, who was going to be protected for a while still. So that was the tough decision to make. They have to do that. It shows that their path is not next year. It's multiple years away.
I'm especially worried about Minaya. He was really good the first 3 months of this year, and he's been terrible the last 2 months. His K's, yep. His strikeouts the first half were 8.97 per nine. Second half, 6.2. I mean, that is a dramatic drop-off. The ground balls have dropped 12% in the second half. Line drives up 5%. Fly balls up 7%. You know, since the All-Star break, ERA is around 6. The whip's around 1.7. His velocity's down. I've actually thought they should shut him down for multiple weeks, and they keep throwing him out there because he says he feels good, but he's not throwing as hard. He's giving up a ton of hits. He's giving up like something like 6 or more hits in 10 of his last 11 starts, and every start he looks like he's kind of dragging out there. His arm slot looks a little bit different. I'm worried that they're hurting him by keep throwing him out there.
I agree, and they've had some pretty. He's gone deep into a couple of games where they could have gotten him out of there sooner, I think, too.
Yeah, I have no idea. I'll have to sit down the offseason. I have no idea where I'm going to slot him in drafts next year. I was really high on him a couple months in. I thought he was a really good guy to buy in leagues, and he pitched well for a while, and he's just fallen off. I have no idea how to value him next year.
Yeah.
So that'll be a tough one.
Sorry, I was trying to finish the thought there. I don't either. I think when you got a guy like that, I think the answer is to punt, right?
That's usually my answer, unless he gets to a point where he's worth you can throw him on the bench or you can throw him in good starts. It's if it gets to the point where he's wanting, you know, your fourth starter, your fifth starter, I'm punting at that point.
Yep.
A guy who's been red hot right now, is speaking of X-A's, is Josh Donaldson. He had 2 home runs today, 2 home runs yesterday. He's now at 30 home runs, 71 RBIs, and only 102 games. He missed about 6 weeks with that calf injury. His ISO is actually at a career high. His Ks are up a little bit, but it was kind of one horrible month. He was a 29% K rate in July where he was really struggling. It's kind of dragged that number kind of up with him the rest of the season. He only had 216 in that month. Since the All-Star break, 21 home runs in 56 games. He's been on fire.
Yeah, he has. Where do you take him next year?
So it's funny. I did that list, and he did not make the honorable mentions. Maybe he should have, so... I don't know. If I can get Donaldson in the back half of the second round next year, I'm jumping on that in a second.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a little bit of the too little, too late syndrome, though,
it
too.
Is.
It's like, yeah, you know, if you had him, you're probably not winning this year. In part, you know, it all counts the same, theoretically, but maybe you would have structured your team differently had he been had done more of this earlier. But, yeah, he did it in such a short amount of games. And you know that the skill level's still there. It's all about health. I mean, we talk about these guys, this concept all the time. the elite skilled players, it's not that their skills necessarily fade. It's that their ability to stay healthy, to perform at full capacity, doesn't remain the same.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, you know, you're not getting value from stolen bases anyway, so I'm a little less concerned about a leg injury. And he seems like he's fine now. The calf is finally healed. I think the problem was that they tried to push it in spring training, try to get him ready for the season. He had the setback. And I think once he kind of missed the time and came back, and, you know, he had a couple weeks where it was kind of spring training for him. He was struggling at the plate, but, you know, he missed most of the spring. So I think he's back to normal. I listed 23 guys in my article, and I don't think he goes before any of them. So I think he's pretty pretty likely a back half second round guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I'll be happy to take him there. I think he's one of those guys. He shows he's healthy in spring training, he gets some helium.
He will. It's just, it's a really deep, like top 20 to 25 next year. It's hard to see him pass me those guys. I think you're right. I think if he starts to hit some home runs in spring and looks fine, he'll move up a little bit, but, I don't know. There's a lot of guys that there's a lot of really good players in the top 20 or so.
Yeah, there are.
Maybe think that drafting in the back half of the first round might not be the worst thing in the world next year. You're going to get two of the top 22 to 23. You could be looking really nice.
But yeah. But if Donaldson's going like 25 to 30, I mean, you look more a little bit closer. Maybe you get that list up to 35 and then you're getting three guys that you really like.
Yeah, it's very true. I didn't put Cody Bellinger in this list. So there's the back half of the second round might be pretty good too.
Yep.
So a guy that I really don't want to take is Kyle Schwarber. I don't know what to do with this guy. He's his 27th home run today. So obviously the power is still very real, but he's hitting 207. In 119 games, 396 at-bats. That's just a batting average. It just kills you in any league. The K rate's still 31%. Do you have any sort of optimism for Schwarber moving forward? I mean, obviously the power is there, but, you know, he's still 179 against lefties. He's got a lot of soft contact. He's bottom 20 in the league in soft contact. I think I'm still off this one.
I'm with you on that one there. He can turn it on. I mean, it is possible that the batting average could turn it around, but I don't see it. I mean, the fact is he's never going to run. That whole thing about, oh, he could qualify a catcher was such a pipe dream, and that got exposed this year. Yeah, and, you know, he's at four games. Maybe you play a Yahoo League or something like that, or some other format where you have relaxed position requirements, but he's outfield only.
Yep.
And there's a lot of guys like that. I think he's got a chance to be overpriced again because people are, you know, There's a lot of people that liked him that didn't get him this year, and may not realize the pain that comes with it. Now, you know, going in today, he had 26 homers and 51 RBI. He's not getting any counting stats at all.
Nope. The home runs is like the only stat that he's helping kind of at all.
Right.
And with the batting average hurting, you know, that takes all that value away, and the other stuff's kind of just okay. And using him in an outfield spot, that's it's not someone that's helping your team.
Yeah. Over under on where he goes next year. If I say, so this year his ADP was 77. If I put him at 100, do you think he goes before or after 100?
I think he goes before 100, but I think it's not by me.
That's a conclusion I would arrive at too.
Yeah, I don't think he should go before 100, but I think that, you know, sexy power, playing on the Cubs, I think someone will jump in maybe, what's that, like about the seventh round? I think that sounds about right.
Yeah.
So another guy that I was trying to figure out what to do with is Tim Beckham. He obviously has been really good since he got traded to Baltimore. Hit a 3-run home run Sunday. Overall in the year, he's hitting 280, 22 home runs, 65 runs, 61 RBIs, 6 stolen bases. So kind of helped across the board. Obviously, the 280 and the 22 home runs are kind of his most important stats. 38% hard hit rate. So really, it's the ball hard, but the K rate is still really high, 28%. He's down a little bit from last year. Doesn't walk very much. Defensive numbers look great, so I think he's, you know, he's pretty solidified in that lineup. Obviously, a really great hitting park, good lineup to hit in. Are you kind of optimistic on Beckham for next year? Pessimistic? Where do you fall on him?
I wonder what the hell the Rays were thinking.
Yeah, me too.
That's my first reaction. I got to get past that, though. I mean, the thing is, it's such a stark difference between what he did with Baltimore and what he did with Tampa Bay, though. I mean, if you're Tampa Bay, you have to feel a little snake bit by that.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. But I mean, how old is he? He's still
27.
I guess he's a couple years older than I thought he was, but you know, he's a first overall pick in 2008. I can't believe it's been that long. You gotta feel. I mean, he had what, you know, 5 home runs last year, 9 home runs the year before, and he's all there with 22 right now. The hard hit rate's kind of the one thing that keeps me a little positive on him, but those strikeouts just worry me.
Yeah, of course. Of course they do. 28% strikeout rate's ridiculously high. And it's worth noting, though, it's gone down considerably in Baltimore, 22% in Baltimore. Maybe it's just, you know, getting out of that stadium and that environment is a good thing for him there. I'll tell you this, though. You know, there's a couple other guys we've talked about this before, too. Never give up on that elite yep. talent. Yep.
Do you think there's anything to the fact that he got there and they just put him at the top of the lineup, they put him in the lineup every day, never had to think about it?
That there was zero competition for the job? Sure.
Yeah, I mean, he always felt like in Tampa Bay, like he was never always in the lineup. He was kind of always moving in and out. He would move here and there. But since he's been in Baltimore, boom, in the lineup every day playing shortstop, never had to think about it, shows up at the park, he's there to play. I don't know. I think there's something a little bit to that.
Might be. Very well might be. Nice outdoor stadium as opposed to that gray indoor monstrosity. I mean, I don't know. The environment around him, maybe it's a lot different. Maybe just having someone there to mentor him. I don't know. I don't know what's going on in the clubhouse at the respective teams. You know, that's the sort of thing. I feel like there's some sort of soft factor. I don't know. And it's made him relax and just be a better player.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I'm going to see where his ADP kind of lands and where he kind of falls in. He's I'm not really sure where it's going to be, but he's an interesting guy to me that you know, when you get 22 home runs and 280 from your shortstop, you know, that's as a middle infield spot, that's pretty valuable.
Absolutely. It's ridiculously valuable. And, you know, he's 3 games away from getting that second base eligibility. I don't know if he'll get it in Baltimore because they've got a pretty good second baseman. So chances are he's going to fall short at second base eligibility. But hey, I'll take a power hitting shortstop, sure.
Yeah, Jonathan Scope's got 104 RBIs. I don't know. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. That's one guy I got right. I was happy with him. But
you definitely nailed him from the very beginning of the year.
Yeah, but it's one. But I did, you know, did I do it with my, you know, did I do it with, you know, put my money where my mouth is? I don't have him in my main event team. He was easily available. You know, that's the thing that's frustrating.
I think you need to go get guys you really like a little bit more, like I do too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, sometimes I don't know if this happens to you sometimes, but I think what happens is I do so many drafts, so many leagues, I almost am like, oh, I've got him in so many places already. What if I'm wrong about him? Maybe I shouldn't push him up. No, you have to get the guys you like.
I try not to do that, but that sneaks in. But I try and treat every draft like I'm trying to draft the best team, and the other drafts don't affect it. But that does sneak in a little bit. I can fully admit that.
Yeah, he went at 10-4 in my league. I mean, that's something. I got to be able to jump on that. Yeah. That's a guy that should be on mine. Instead, I got K-Rod. So yay.
That worked well.
Yeah, and Addison Russell too. I took both of those at the 9-10, not quite turn, but 9-14, 10-2. Scope went 2 picks after that, so blech.
So a question from Twitter. Someone asked us about Cincinnati Reds pitcher Robert Stevenson. Pitched really well today. 6 innings, 1 hit, 8 strikeouts. Last 6 starts, giving up 2 earned runs or fewer in 5 of them. 41 strikeouts and 31 2/3. Really impressive there. Swing strike rate's been taking a nice jump this year to 12.6. The big issue for me is the walks. Even in that good stretch, he has 21 walks in those 31 and 2/3. The walks are still 6.1 walks per 9. I just in pitching in that park, you put guys on base, you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah, you are. That's why my bids will be tepid on him. You know, I thought, and maybe, you know, again, we talk about pedigree and not giving up on guys. That still applies with him, but we're talking round 25 or later in the NFBC.
Yeah, I think he's shown some steps, which I think is good. I mean, the K jump has really been impressive. He was about, you know, mid sevens last year, both in the minors and in the majors, and he's taken that definitely up. But, you know, I need to see the walks come down. I mean, 6 per 9 is just, you just can't pitch with that. It hurts the whip so much that you're automatically hurting teams with that. But he's taking steps up. He's still only 24. Like you said, a pedigree guy. I think he's someone that, around 25 or later, where I can put him on the bench or maybe kind of watch his few starts in a 12-teamer and kind of see what we're looking at. See if he take that one step up with the walks. He could come pretty quick, though.
Yeah, he could. But he's also the type of guy that you could have a two-step and you still don't want to use him. And yeah. I don't want guys like that.
Yeah, I mean, and we're talking about these last six starts, but then, you know, right in the middle of that one, he had the blow-up last start. He only made it three innings. So it's hard to trust when a guy that walks that many guys just gets in trouble so fast. You can give up six, seven runs before you know it.
Yeah, for sure. And
he can pull a Dylan Peters on you real quick.
Yes, he could. I want to talk about – speaking of pedigreed Reds, though, that, you know, are doing better than their minor league numbers would suggest, how about Jesse Winker? You know, six homers going into today, you know, 365 OBP. We know the OBP skill is always there, but he's slugging 505 after spending basically the last year and a half at Louisville, barely topping 400 in slugging. Is it just something that he's working on one specific thing in the minors, and then when he gets to the majors, he doesn't worry about that, and now he's in a better ballpark to hit and kind of turns it loose? Is that possible?
I mean, I think so. If you look at his strikeout rates, I mean, they're definitely up in the majors, and that may be a sign that he's still walking as much, but maybe a sign that he's opening up the swing a little bit, trying to hit for a little more power, a little more launch angle, all that stuff. But I don't know, kind of interesting, and, you know, you got to like a guy in that park. Is he a starting outfielder for them next year to start the season?
Well, that's just the thing. I mean, Hamilton's on the DL right now, which makes it convenient that they can get him some playing time.
Right.
There's Hamilton, there's Duvall, and there's Schebler. And Schebler, you know, for all of his faults, I mean, this is a guy that's a 27-homer guy slugging .491 on the year with pretty good defense. Duvall, you know, is going to start. I have a hard time envisioning the Reds pulling the plug on Billy Hamilton, who hasn't been – you know, he's kind of been disappointing in his own right.
I was going to say, do you think they should pull a plug as a Reds fan?
Kind of.
Okay.
I mean, his defense is so good, though. I mean, I think we overlooked that.
Yeah.
When we're evaluating players. Offensively, he's been obviously a massive disappointment. .299 OBP as your leadoff hitter just isn't getting it done. And they never once moved him down in the lineup. He was pretty much leadoff all season. I can't remember too many games where he didn't bat leadoff. And that's killing you. Whereas, you know, Winker, I mean, it's a small sample size theater, but 365 OBP is exactly what you want in front of Joey Votto. Guys on base.
So in real baseball, how do you kind of factor in the 58 stolen bases? I mean, I know he doesn't get on base that much, but when he walks or gets a single, you know, suddenly he's in scoring position. How much do you factor that in as kind of a Reds fan, baseball fan? Like, how much does that give a bump to his OBP?
Yeah, maybe 10, 15, 20, maybe 20 points. I don't know.
Okay.
I think it would, you know, it's still below average for a leadoff hitter, though, even right. If accounting for that.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, obviously, fantasy-wise, pretty amazing how consistent. 56, 57, 58, 58 steals the last 4 years. Never really gotten to that 75-80 plateau that we thought he might get to at some point, but you know, in this age of not many guys stealing bases, those 60 are pretty darn valuable.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously his season got cut short.
Right.
Maybe they'll call him. Maybe he'll get the last week. But yeah, he could. Even if he didn't get hurt, he's probably going to end up in the mid-60s. But that's the thing, is he's a novelty play. He does one thing for you. That's it. That's the list.
And do you think we're at the point now where we can pretty much know what he is, and this is kind of where he is?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I mean, he's 26. There could be an age 27 bump, but it's not going to manifest itself in power.
My fear with drafting him next year is that we're at the point now where, you know, I think a bad month, and I think it's possible the Reds pull the plug at some point if he starts to struggle. So that would be that would concern me with drafting him, especially because you have to draft a team around him. You know, you don't draft stolen bases anywhere else if you take him, because you're kind of counting on that. But worries me a little bit that he may not make it the whole year next year if he doesn't improve a little bit.
Right. Pair him versus D. Gordon. At least you're getting batting average from Gordon. At least you're getting runs scored from Gordon. 101 runs this year. You know, Gordon is actually – he's a guy I don't have anywhere, but he's been worth your investment this year.
Yeah, and I think you also get that, you know, the feeling that he's their second baseman no matter what. I don't think there's any risk of him losing playing time, even if he goes in a slump, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
you know, the Reds have prospects coming, and they've got, I think they have, you would know better than I do, but I think they have a couple guys in the minors that are coming too, and that outfield could get crowded pretty quick.
It will. It will. And, you know, this is a good problem to have. It hopefully allows them to at least improve their pitching at some point in time. That's their real issue, is they just haven't developed starting pitchers.
That is true. That sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
We have to stop rooting for teams that do bad things at the same time.
Yeah, let's try to work on that one there.
Last guy I want to talk about before I let you get out of here, Eduardo Rodriguez with the Red Sox. One of those guys that I always kind of get sucked into. I think it's one of those things when I watch him, he seems to pitch well, and I watch him, I seem to really like what I see. He threw pretty well today, 5 2/3, 7 hits, 2 earned runs, 7 strikeouts. ERA in the year is 4.15. The whip is 1.27. So in the AL East, you know, that's a guy that where you drafted him is probably helping you more than he's hurting you. The Ks are nice, 9.8 Ks per 9. So the strikeouts are helping too. The walks are 3.2. So not great, not horrible. Home runs are an issue. Where do you fall on Rodriguez going into next year? He's a guy that I always kind of think the next level's coming. And I don't know if that's wishful thinking or that maybe actually on the way.
He's 24. It clearly could be on the way.
Yeah.
Give me a guy that can miss bats. 135 Ks, 122 innings. He's exact, and if you notice, the progression has been pretty good. He's exactly the type of guy that could go crazy. I like him in keeper leagues a lot next year. I kind of, in this RotoWire staff keeper league, I had to deal him away. Well, I didn't have to, but I did deal him away, and unfortunately, it didn't work out because I got Lance McCullers in the deal, and he went immediately on the DL right after that and has been giving me very little returns. Not that Erod's been good lately. His last starts have been good, but before that, he had a pretty rough stretch. But, you know, give me that guy because I know he's going to get it. I just feel it.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way there. You know, there's enough that I see that's good there that I think, you know, a little bit adjustments, a little bit progression, he could be he could come pretty quick and be a mid-threes ERA guy. You know, it will be tough in the AL East, be tough as a lefty in Fenway. We've talked about that many times when we talked about Chris Sale. But, yeah, he's a guy that I think I'm interested in for next year too.
All right, good. In agreement.
Cool. Anybody else that jumps in your head you want to talk about?
No, I think I'm good.
Cool. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Again, if you could please rate or review the podcast, we would greatly appreciate that. Jeff and I will be at you next weekend. I think that's our last show of the season.
Yeah, maybe we'll do it. Yeah, maybe so. Maybe we'll do a little playoff thing either. We'll see. But yeah. It might very well be. Well, and then we'll have to do one in the off season too. When we get close to magazine season, just so we can give everybody a little off season love too.
Yeah, I think we should definitely try and do that a couple times. So anyway, I hope everybody has a good fantasy week. Grind out these last 2 weeks and hopefully win some leagues. So everybody, we'll talk to you next week.